tied together. Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
The Paracast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Paracast. So in the past couple of weeks, Chris and I have been ragging on various UFO conventions where they hire some zany people to be the speakers, and they kind of put the more responsible speakers aside, and at least if the evidence of the past conference of the International UFO Conference is any indication, well, the people don't care for that sort of thing.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. There's plenty of true believers out there that just will lap up any applesauce that you put in front of them if it conforms to their pre-programmed sort of front-loaded reality views. So, no, I'm sure there were a lot of people that thought it was the greatest thing that they ever experienced since the invention of sliced bread. But for people that are a bit more up to speed, a little bit more skeptical and discerning, have a little bit more of, an understanding of the complexities and how complicated this whole subject is, I think they were a little disappointed. But again, Open Minds puts on a really good event. They spare no expense on the location, and I just wish that they'd try to take the high road when it comes to the quality of the speakers. I really did. Thought the inclusion of Rosemary Guiley was a real good one. Of course, Antonio is always just a pleasure to listen to. He's an amazing historian.
He's one of undiscovered treasures in the UFO field. A lot of people don't hear of him except for that magazine, the stuff he did with Tim Beckley and his appearances on the Paracast.
Right.
He's one of those people who doesn't really get his due.
Yeah, and Rosemary Guiley, too. She doesn't go around promoting herself. She's very low profile. She's not in it for ego purposes. It's a career for her. I mean, she is definitely a professional writer. But talk about a woman who really knows how to go out in the field, interact with people, and then come back and present that information in either book or conference form. There were enough of those types of guests. Of course, the first appearance of the Chilean general, who's the head of the UFO desk down there in Chile. I mean, there were some bright spots, but, I can't really... I can't complain too loudly. I mean, we won a couple of EV awards, so I should be extolling their virtues. But, last year at least there were some real cutting-edge presenters. There were more cutting-edge presenters than not. This year it was the other way around.
Well, in the end, you wonder here the image of the UFO field. I think that's the biggest thing. It's not that someone who sponsors a UFO conference is not entitled to earn back their investment and make a few dollars for their work. You know, no one's going to begrudge that. These are not nonprofit corporations. And even a nonprofit corporation, they've got expenses, they've got salaries, they've got to fly in all these presenters.
Right.
They have to pay for hotel rooms. It's not a cheap thing to do.
Oh.
And take it from me, as you know, Chris, I did this once years ago. I only took a $100 bath. Today, at today's exchange rates, maybe it would be a $200 or $300 bath.
Yeah,
but after even work,
that's how he's done on the X conferences over the years.
I gather he's taken a big loss on
those things. Big time. Yeah, thousands and thousands of dollars.
So how has he survived? Does he have a day job?
I don't know. Maybe we should ask his handlers.
This is something we speculated upon some years back on the Paracast when we had one, I guess, semi- unfortunate encounter with Steve Bassett where he kind of went off on us when we challenged him about putting speakers on the podium who were not vetted because they would drag a crowd in.
Well, and the same thing, I think, with Stephen Greer. Of course, the majority of his disclosure witnesses were very, very believable, and they had track records. But then salted in there were a few that you just had to scratch your head and go, Stephen, what were you thinking getting these people up there? So, I mean, it's the Wild West. This is a proto-scientific field. There's no standards. There's no, anybody can just hang themselves out there and call themselves an expert and go around and gather anonymous witnesses and keep contributing to the ever-growing myth that surrounds this whole field. And it's rot with disinformation, it's rot with misinformation, and you just have to listen to shows like the Paracast to help fine-tune and hone your BS meter and, you know, and just, you know, kind of do your research. I keep saying that. I sound like a broken record, I know, but I know everybody doesn't have the time or the inclination to do that. They just want to believe, so... You know, just be careful of that two-believer Kool-Aid that circulates out there.
Right. And the other problem is here, you wonder here, you have all these disparate viewpoints. You have people who are going on those lecture tours. They're appearing on radio and TV. And they don't have anything to offer other than some fanciful story. And, of course, the conspiracy theorists amongst you will say, hey, maybe they're government plants. I think it's just people looking for 15 minutes of fame. And this is the reality show of another color, you know, right now. Reality shows are big.
Yeah, or they think they're going to make $1 million writing a book on UFOs or something when we're losing readers left and right every day. So,
I know that one of my favorite books of all time was Shockingly Close to the Truth, which was kind of a semi-autobiographical book co-authored by Jim Moseley, predominantly Jim with the late Carl Frock. And the thing about this book is that I know the numbers, and I won't reveal them. It's, as they say, it's Jim's business, his co-author's business, not anyone else's. The numbers were pathetic. I used to write books on how to use the Apple iMac, and I'd make more money from that book than from the UFO book.
A lot more people that use iMacs and will buy a UFO book.
Well, now, of course, you know, Apple owns the planet.
Yeah.
You know, we understand now that Apple is bigger than Poland.
The company in the world, 2 years running now.
That's right.
What do you think of that new little iPad? That looks pretty hot.
We have a discussion of that on, of course, the Tech Night Out Live. But the most interesting thing about it is that you have this display with over 3 million pixels. This is this Retina display. Double work.
Right. Yeah.
It's actually four times. The figures are doubled. Therefore, you multiply them by each other. You get four times the resolution of the current model. And we had one of our readers over at the TechNightOwl.com look at the numbers for other people selling displays with 3.1 million pixels. And he found figures like $2,000.
Right.
Now, Apple sells the new iPad, or the iPad 3, whatever you want to call it, for $499 up. So the basic model is $499, and you have this display. It's the same price as last year's model with a display of one quarter of the pixels.
Right.
Also $499. They did a teardown, and they estimated Apple is paying $70 for each one of those displays. And you have to think here, does Apple have some kind of alien technology? Maybe the technology that we recovered from Roswell was secreted into the hands of Steve Jobs back in the 1970s when Apple was first founded. And over the years, they've tried to reverse engineer that technology, and Apple has now funneled it out to their suppliers because it's going to take a long time for any other company to build a display for a tablet computer with over 3 million pixels in it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, they could do it. You know, they got the oomph. They got the juice.
Well, they better have good production because in 2 days they sold out their online allocation. And people are talking about maybe 4 or 5 million copies the first month, maybe 50 million for the year.
Oh, man. I should have jumped into Apple stock back in the 80s.
Oh, if I bought Apple stock at $10 a share. And I was a journalist, you know? I was trying to be honest, forthright, trying to be responsible to my profession. So I never bought stock in the companies I covered. What a mistake. No mistake today, my friend Kurt Southerly is joining us. And Kurt sent me a letter several weeks ago and says, you know, one person we haven't talked about, we talk about the Maury Island case, real or fanciful, but we don't talk about one of the people who was involved in the investigation, and that is possibly the original UFO pioneer himself, which was Kenneth Arnold.
Yeah.
You know, the legend, 9 disc-shaped objects over Mount Rainier in the state of Washington, you know, near your stamping grounds, Chris. And we don't talk about him very much, but if he didn't report that sighting, if the media didn't pick him up on it and say, flying saucers, where would UFO research be today? We'll talk about Kenneth Arnold, Maury Island, and more with Kurt Southerly coming up next on
The Paracast. Podcast.
As you know, the Paracast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service, such as Steve Jobs, the best-selling authorized biography from Walter Isaacson. For that free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/paracast. That's audiblepodcast.com/paracast. You know, we develop trust in the people we know, but we don't really know someone we can see. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It's a simple online meeting service. It's GoToMeeting by Citrix Autex. Is a webcam and a click to instantly collaborate. You can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. You can try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
My old friend Kurt Southerly has been investigating UFOs for many years, dating back, I guess, to the 70s. And I, as an older person, have been around the field for quite a bit of years myself. But Kurt, as a reporter, a real reporter, has done a lot of the legwork that's required in investigating these things, not just sitting back and reading books, but calling people, going on the scene, et cetera, et cetera. Kurt, welcome back to the Paracast.
No, it's good to be back, Gene.
I wanted to ask you about the topic of our discussion. We hear the legend, a businessman
sees nine disc-shaped objects, June 24th, 1947. His name is Kenneth Arnold. And we hear about that, we think about the impact, but we don't know too much about the man or maybe his connection to the Maury Island mystery. Tell us, who was Kenneth Arnold?
Well, Kenneth Arnold was at the time of his, I guess you would say, infamous June 24, 1947 sighting. He was 28 years old. He was 28 years old in June 24, 1947, which was the day that he made his famous sighting of nine flying objects in the vicinity of Mount Rainier in Washington State. And I guess most of your listeners have probably heard a little bit about Arnold, but they probably don't know a lot about the man himself. He was your prototypical American patriot. He was as a youngster, he had been an Eagle Boy Scout. He was an all-state football player, and I guess he had intentions of becoming going pro when he got older, and there was some kind of a knee injury, so that prevented that. He was a world-class swimmer and board diver. Essentially, he was almost Olympic level. He was an aircraft pilot. He had a private pilot's license. He was a deputy sheriff's deputy sheriff out in the state of Idaho. He oftentimes flew prisoners to holding facilities and to different incarceration areas. Oh, geez, well, he did so many things. I mean, he was professionally he was the seller. He was a salesman for fire control equipment. And you have to excuse me. Some of this, I'm dredging some of this up from memory. It's been quite a long time since I've actually written about any of this. But he was just an all-around great guy, and I was fortunate that I was able to actually get a short telephone interview with the man about his experiences, both insofar as his sighting and later events that occurred, which in Tacoma, Washington, events that are very much like something out of the X-Files. They're just, I'm not sure what direction do you want to take this in, where do you want to start?
Let's start with Kenneth Arnold's actual sighting, because that's where the word flying saucers came from. But as I recall, the actual objects he saw weren't saucers.
Well, apparently the lead object was different. The lead object was more of a crescent shape or a flying wing shape. The other objects apparently were disc-like. It was the fact that the lead object was different was something he kind of held back from the media for a long period of time. He didn't really talk about that. But essentially the sighting occurred when he was on one of his business trips. He was heading for, I believe, Cahalas, Washington State. And he was flying his Call Air A2 aircraft, which was a small single-engine aircraft. And he decided to divert from his flight path to look for a crash of a C-46 Marine transport.
So ever the hero here, he's just trying to do something good.
Well, he was also part of a search and rescue team of flyers. He knew the area. He knew the area around Mount Rainier and the mountains in and around that area like the back of his hand. So he decided he had a little extra time. He thought, well, the crash had actually occurred the previous year. There were, I believe, if I recall correctly, that I think there were eight Marine transports that were. They were caught up in a heavy snowstorm. One of them went down and disappeared, and it was carrying quite a number of Marines on board. The military conducted a search for about 2 weeks. They gave it up. The survivors of the missing people put a reward up. I think they put up $5,000, and that was continuing the following summer. And Arnold, he really wasn't looking for the reward. Again, you're right, he was just trying to do a good deed. He thought, well, I'll swing around and see if I can spot this wreckage someplace. He searched for a while. He didn't see anything. He started back on his flight path. And at that point, something flashed off the cockpit of his aircraft. It was like a reflection from the sunlight. And it caught his attention. Then he saw another flash. And when he looked up ahead, about 23, 24 miles in front of him, and within in the vicinity of Mount Rainier, he saw these objects. moving in single file or what they called echelon formation, and they were just sweeping in and out among the peaks. And as they passed behind a sub-peak of Mount Rainier, he knew the distance, and he also knew the distance between the various peaks, so he was able to calculate roughly the speed they were traveling at. The speed was incredible. He estimated, and he actually downplayed the estimated speed for the sake of accuracy, but he figured it was probably between 1,200 and 1,600 miles per hour. Now, later that year, in October of 1947, Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier in the Bell X-1 rocket plane. That was the fastest any man had ever flown at that time, and he was only traveling at 700 miles an hour. So obviously these objects, if Arnold's estimation of their speed was correct, were far flying in great excess, or in, how am I going to say this, in tremendously faster than anything we had flown before. And he had no idea what this was. He saw these objects. They startled him. He, being a professional pilot, being very careful, he checked the surrounding area. The only other aircraft within the vicinity was an airliner, I believe, that was again also to his port side or left side, and that was trailing him by about 7 or 8 miles. But there was nothing else around.
Now, this kind of aircraft, did it have instrumentation or what?
No, he had limited instrumentation. It was a small single-engine aircraft. He was pretty much a seat-of-the-pants flyer. You're talking about an era where we didn't have a lot of radio electronics. I mean, I don't think he had a radio on the aircraft. He simply flew by compass headings, by his observation of the ground.
So he couldn't call the control tower and say, we've got a problem.
No, he wasn't able to contact anybody and let them know that there was something out there. He just continued on to his next destination. He landed and immediately started telling a number of the people at the airport what he had experienced. And he got all sorts of reactions. He was ridiculed by some. Other people were saying, well, it's probably one of those rockets that they're testing, or maybe it's something the Russians have. And nobody really knew. Anyway, he continued on after he refueled. He continued on to his final destination, and he ended up talking to, I believe, a reporter at the East Oregonian newspaper. And they did a brief interview. The reporter took a statement from Arnold, sent out two or three paragraphs.
Now, how long was this after the sighting? At what point did we first learn that this happened? I'll get the answer in a moment. We have Kurt Southerly joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio.
Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Have you ever seen a U.S. postage stamp featuring Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, or George Washington? If you're into stamp collecting, you know it's a fun, affordable hobby. America's leading stamp dealer is the Mystic Stamp Company, and they want you to have their free 140-page color catalog. Go to mysticstampad.com, the website of the Mystic Stamp Company, serving stamp collectors since 1923. Mystic Stamp is well known in the industry for its experience, superior customer service, and an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau. Go to mysticstamp.com. ad.com to request your free 140-page U.S. stamp color catalog packed with collecting tips, special offers, color photos, and over 4,600 available stamps. Call 800-433-7811 or go to mysticstampad.com. That's 800-433-7811 and ask for your free U.S. stamp catalog or mysticstampad.com. Mystic Stamp Company, America's leading stamp dealer.
Are you having trouble paying your mortgage? Maybe your mortgage loan is upside down or in foreclosure. Maybe the bank already foreclosed on you. Don't sit around being a victim of bank fraud. Fight back. We have the tools to help you fight back. Here's how. Go to InspectorAudit.com and click on the GCN Radio Special. Order a summary audit. Find the real truth about your loan.
Maybe like me, you'll find your bank loan was paid off already. Maybe, like me, you'll find your bank defrauded you at the closing. And maybe, like me, you will go after them.
Did you know 78% of home loans in the last 10 years violated consumer credit laws? We should not let the banks get away with this fraud. Go to InspectorAudit.com and click on the GCN Radio Special. Order a summary audit today and find the truth about your mortgage loan. That's InspectorAudit.com or call 855-373-4948. That's 1-855-373-4948.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to FakeTV.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to FakeTV.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, and Chris, by the way, is on the phone today because his copy of Skype is non-functional. This all happened since Microsoft acquired Skype. It's their fault, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay, everything is Microsoft's fault. Remember that. I guess in a few years it'll be Apple's fault, but still time for Microsoft's fault. Okay, Kurt Southerly is talking to us about Kenneth Arnold, the guy whose sighting had created what? A legend? We don't know. Okay. I was going to ask you, Kurt, before we broke, how long did it take from the time Arnold had the sighting until we learned about it in the press?
It was about a day went by. When he landed after the sighting, his first landing, that was in at the, I believe it's pronounced the Yakima Airport in the area of Boise. That's where he told a number of people that he had experienced something, he had witnessed something, and he was ridiculed by some, and others basically said, well, it was something the government was testing. Anyway, the next day he landed in Pendleton, Oregon, and that's where he talked to a reporter named Bill Baquet, and he was a reporter for the Pendleton East Oregonian, and he told Pendleton his story, or briefly kind of summarized it. Pendleton sent out a short story on this, and I think it went out. Actually, I think it went out over the Associated Press, and or maybe it was UPI at the time, United Press International. And anyway, Pendleton went off to lunch. Didn't really think a whole lot about it. He got back, and the place was in bedlam. I mean, everybody was getting calls from all over the place. The newspaper was being inundated with phone calls about more on this flying saucer story, as it kind of came to be known.
At what point did the name Flying Saucers become public? With the initial report or what?
Yeah, he at one point Arnold made a comment in describing the objects. He said that they moved through the air kind of like saucers skipping over the water, and that was sort of reinterpreted as flying saucer. And it obviously became legendary, and Arnold had no intention of coining that phrase. It was just the way he described it, because they had been moving in this echelon formation, just sort of bobbing through the air, and they were obviously powered or flew in a fashion unlike any aircraft that he knew about or that he had heard of to that point, or that anybody else to that point had ever heard about. In fact, the idea that this could have been a product of Russian or Soviet Union science or any other terrestrial science at that time was kind of ludicrous, but nobody, they didn't know what to think. Everybody that heard about this, and there were other sightings too at the time. In fact, maybe I should touch on that a bit.
Yeah, let's talk about what happened around it. But did the initial flurry of reports all surround Kenneth Arnold and flying saucers? Was it also about other reports?
His was the trigger. His was the first that really made headlines. And Arnold's story and his photo was splashed all over newspapers all over the country. But in subsequent days, this was, of course, that was June 24. A couple of weeks later, another individual, an airline pilot named Emil Smith, E.J. Smith, or I believe in some accounts his middle initial is H. Smith and his co-pilot and some passengers on an airliner that he was flying spotted a formation of objects that he described as being very similar to what Arnold had seen. In fact, this was July 4th in 1947. And Arnold and Smith later actually met. They went to a newspaper office to look at a photograph of a strange flying disc that had been taken by a U.S. Coast Guardsman. And the paper had published the photo, and they wanted to see an original copy of it. Arnold went there, and he was introduced to Smith, who was there, maybe not coincidentally.
Excuse me for interrupting, but was this a Coast Guard report from the Puget Sound area?
No, this was something different. I believe this was a Coast Guardsman who happened to be driving on a highway, and he saw something and took a photo of it. The details of the photo aren't, or that particular episode aren't recounted very clearly in most reports, simply because it's almost an afterthought in the annals of what was occurring at that time.
Well, I also seem to remember that there was quite a wave of sightings that occurred over the next week, 10 days. Prior to the Roswell event, where
yeah,
I think in Idaho, Oregon, Washington, that whole Pacific Northwest area, even down the coast a ways, had quite a flurry of reports, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and there were the reports all over the place, and it's a matter of speculation as to whether the reports were triggered by Arnold's sighting, in many cases, many of them maybe being made up, or whether it was simply that people were suddenly literally watching the skies and taking notice to things that they wouldn't have noticed before. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, there was a whole wave, a whole flurry of sightings actually continued on pretty much through the rest of that summer.
Now, I know it's interesting here. The supposed official Air Force explanation of Arnold's sighting is that was a mirage. Where did they get that from?
Wow, that's something I had never heard before.
That's according to the Wikipedia report on Arnold. They claim that's what the Air Force said, which was disputed, and they mentioned by people like Jerry Clark, who said, obviously, it could not have been a mirage. And certainly you think an experienced pilot, someone who is really a seat-of-the-pants kind of guy, he's not inundated with all this instrumentation as you have airline pilots today. You know, today the plane can almost fly itself. Then you had to do all the work yourself.
Well, the military was... They did talk to Arnold to investigate his account. It was Captain Brown and Lieutenant Davidson, I believe, were the names of the two men. They were with Army A2 Intelligence, and they visited Arnold at his home after some of the uproar had died down. And Arnold, up to that point, he was being inundated with mail. He received tons of letters from all over the country, from people that wanted information about this sighting or that had sightings of their own. Some of the letters were crank. Some of them were from people that were genuinely mystified by what was going on. And these two officers showed up. They interviewed Arnold, very polite, took him very seriously. And, of course, course, at the time, there was some concern about national security. I mean, was this something the Russians had? Nobody knew.
So the same two officers that were there to investigate the Harold Dahl and Ed Clifton claim of the Maury Island?
We're getting ahead of ourselves a bit, but the same two that ended up dying in a mysterious plane crash.
Right, yeah. I was just checking.
Yeah.
So they had a background with Arnold.
Yeah, they did. They gave Arnold a phone number after they looked through all of his mail with his permission, and they gave him a phone number, and they said, look, if you can think of anything else or if anything else happens, feel free to call us. Then they went on their way, and Arnold really never expected to hear from him again. And it was sometime around then that he received a phone call from some guy that I believe you knew, Gene, a guy named Ray Palmer.
This is how Kenneth Arnold became from businessman and UFO witness into actually UFO researcher.
That's exactly right. He got the call from Palmer, who was at the time, I guess, the editor of the was it Fate magazine or was it Amazing that he edited?
At that point, I think it was Fate. Now, Fate magazine was founded by Curtis Fuller and
correct.
By Ray Palmer. And later on, they had a falling out, the Fullers and the Palmers, I guess, and Ray went off to do his own thing. But this time, of course, Palmer contacted Arnold, which had to be something out of the blue. By the way, if you've read the book by Edward Ruppelt, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects, he calls Palmer, quote, the Chicago publisher. And we'll get into more of that in a moment. By the way, there are lots of ways to contact us here at the PowerCast. You can write us, news@theparacast.com. That's news. @theparacast.com. You can send us a tweet. The PowerCast. What else can we be? The PowerCast on Twitter. Or check out our forums. Forum.theparacast.com. Once again, that's forum.theparacast.com. Sign up. Get in on all the action. We have Kurt Southerly joining us, Gene and Chris, on
The PowerCast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo Tote Bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the PowerCast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants. So before you plant your survival garden this year, is your soil healthy? Maximize your crisis garden soil with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 organic soil conditioner, fertilizer amendment, and compost accelerant provides healthier gardens and faster, efficient garden composting. EM1 from Terraganics.com quickly improves soil structure by increasing nutrient availability and converting organic matter into soil humus. This improves seed germination and root growth, improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, nutrient value of fruits and vegetables, and improves shelf life. And when rain is not in the forecast, no worries. EM1 improves moisture retention in soils, helping reduce drought stress. Just like you prepare all else, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics. Life's getting better.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include micro plant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Micro plant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
The perfect water for drinking, bathing, and cleaning. Right at your fingertips? Yes, you can now have the most powerful water ionizer on the market for less than half the price of competitors. The Genesis Platinum Water Ionizer from GibsonsHealth.com creates the perfect drinking water of 9.5 pH, automatically cleans every time you use it, and even tells you when to change filters. Other 7-plate water ionizers are priced at $2,000 or even $3,000. But the Genesis Platinum is only $16.95. Get yours today at GibsonsHealth.com. Under Nutritionals, be sure to click on Essential Oils for Aromatic Liquids Extracted from a Broad Range of Flowers, Stems, Seeds, and Bark. And to really balance your body, click on Go Green, the most complete green drink available, necessary for survival. All this and more are found at GibsonsHealth.com. Call 800-388-6844. That's 800-388-6844 or GibsonsHealth.com. Healthful living since 1974.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
We have Kurt Southerly, and we're talking about Kenneth Arnold. Kurt, of course, has written about UFOs for years. He actually had a book out called UFO Mysteries, A Reporter Seeks the Truth. It was published about 10 years ago. It is still available if you want to get a copy. It's really a great book. It's actually the one and only UFO book that my son has ever read. So, Kurt, you have to feel yourself proud that you inspired him to read a little bit about that subject. Okay, we're talking about Kenneth Arnold and about the fact that out of the blue, Ray Palmer, of course, he's notorious or famous for the Shaver mystery about creatures underneath the earth and Richard Shaver. He was the editor of Amazing Stories. He knew people like Edgar Rice Burroughs, and that's the guy who wrote the novel on which this movie, John Carter, is based. So, you know, Palmer got around both science fiction and the paranormal. So he calls Kenneth Arnold out of the blue. What happened next?
Well, according to most of the accounts, in fact, pretty much all the various accounts that pertain to this episode, Palmer told Arnold that he had received a letter from two harbor patrolmen in Tacoma, Washington, and these two harbor patrolmen, and I put quotes around that, they claimed that they had spotted flying discs or flying donuts or something over Maury Island, which today is actually a peninsula. At the time, I guess it was actually just an island distinct and separate from the mainland, but now it's due to geological changes, it's now a peninsula.
Well, of course, there's no global warming.
Right. And anyway, this is in Puget Sound. And so Palmer essentially wanted to know if Arnold would fly out there to investigate at all expenses paid. In fact, I think I need to back up on something. I've jumped ahead of myself a little bit. Initially, when Palmer contacted Arnold, he asked him if he would write an article for the magazine about his sighting. And Arnold did not do this. He declined to do this. Instead, he sent him a copy of a report that he had filed with the Air Force. And in fact, Arnold ended up in the aviation record books, because he was the first pilot to officially report the sighting of flying saucers or unidentified flying objects. Anyway, when Palmer contacted him again, it was about the letter that he had received from these two harbor patrolmen, and it was apparently sent to him by somebody named Fred Lee Chrisman, who later became famous for other reasons, and we can get into that later. But in the letter, Chrisman said that they had spotted these objects, that something had happened, and he was wondering if Palmer would like to hear more about this. And Palmer contacted Arnold and asked him to fly out. Arnold initially declined. And then he was talking about this with a friend of his, a colonel, I believe the man's name was Colonel Wieland, who was supposed to have been big shot at the Nuremberg trials at the end of World War II. He was a close friend of Arnold's. And there's some suspicion that that he may have had something to do with all of this. Arnold was surrounded by some strange intelligence people, or people that were allegedly part of the intelligence community. There was an aviation editor at the Idaho Daily Statesman, a guy named Dave Johnson, who was rumored to have been part of the intelligence community and supposedly had actually been compiling a dossier on Arnold after all of this occurred. There were a number of other people, but Arnold was in a position as a deputy federal marshal to be surrounded by these kind of people. But anyway, I'm kind of digressing. He finally agreed after talking to Wieland. Wieland basically said, look, if the guy's going to pay you to fly to Tacoma, Washington, investigate this stuff, you know, why not take his money and do it? So Arnold decided, okay, he contacted Palmer. He said, I'll do it. He arranged to take off for Tacoma. He didn't file a flight plan. He simply left from a pasture near his home. At the time, it was early enough in the era of aviation that you could often do that. You didn't need to file a professional flight plan. And I think his wife was really the only one that knew where he was going. Anyway, he left. He flew into Tacoma. I'm trying to remember the date. I honestly don't recall the date that he actually flew in there. But he got to Tacoma. He landed at a small airport outside of the city. He decided to land outside of the city rather than closer in because he was famous. His picture was all over the newspapers. He wanted to go in some place where he thought nobody would know him.
So were people actually just coming up in the street saying, you're Kenneth Arnold, tell me about the space people?
I don't recall anybody actually saying that to him, or in my research, I never uncovered that, but I'm sure that happened. And I know when I talked to him on the telephone, he was very brusque because he was just disgusted with the news media. So obviously he was being hounded by the news media continually. But he was a private kind of person. And this whole thing was just completely different for him. He was not the kind of guy to go seeking fame or notoriety. And he just wanted to kind of get to the bottom of this because he felt it was his patriotic duty. You know, if this was something that the Russians had or something that some other country had and it could be a threat to the United States, he needed to get to the bottom of this if he could. So he lands at this little airport, uses the airport payphone to call into the city looking for a room to stay at, and the city is in the throes of a housing shortage. There was almost literally no place to stay in any of the hotels. He called every place. He couldn't find a room. So finally he called the Winthrop Hotel, which was the largest and most expensive hotel in the city. And lo and behold, they had a room registered for Kenneth Arnold. Or I should say reserved for Kenneth Arnold. And he said, this has to be a different Kenneth Arnold because I didn't reserve a room. And the clerk that he talked to said, well, you know, nobody else has claimed it. It's yours if you want it. So he thought, all right. He took a room. He gets into town, looks through the local phone book after he got settled in, and he's trying to locate the people, the two principal players in this alleged sighting of UFOs over Maury Island. Now, the two players was a guy named Fred Lee Chrisman, I mentioned him before, and Harold Dahl. Now, supposedly they were the operators the co-owners of a small boat, and they used to put out into the harbor and they'd locate drifting logs, and they would snag these logs and bring them in, and they would resell them. And I guess they also supposedly operated some sort of a lumber mill. And on this particular instance, Dahl claimed, I guess he ended up coming to the room. Arnold located Dahl's number in the phone book, called him. Dahl basically said, look, I don't want to talk about this, and if I were you, I'd just leave town. And he just sounded real nervous about the whole thing. Well, finally, after being pressured by Arnold, he agreed to come to the hotel room. He showed up. I told him the story about how he had been out in the boat, There was a deckhand was with him, the son was with him, the family dog was with him, and these objects flew overhead, and one of them appeared to be in trouble, and he said they looked like huge metallic donuts with portholes around the inside and, I guess, the outside of the objects. Some kind of strange slag-like material began to spew out of some of the openings at the center of one of the objects, which appeared to be in trouble. This stuff fell all over the water, fell on the shore of nearby Maury Island, and I guess some of it hit the boat. The dog was supposedly killed. Dahl's boy was supposedly injured. I guess his arm was broken or something. And the windshield of the boat was broken, and I guess the wheelhouse was damaged. Anyway, Dahl said he turned around, went back. I guess he reported this to Fred Lee Chrisman, who, depending on the stories you read, Chrisman was his equal. Some say he was his superior in the lumber business. In any event, these two were kind of joined at the hip, it almost seems. I mean, they were closely involved in whatever was occurring at that time.
Now, we can ask you later, but Chrisman is a peculiar character with a strange story, but we'll get into that as we progress.
Okay.
So,
I don't know if you're ready to take a break or not.
No. I wanted to continue with that. Go ahead for another minute or so.
Okay. Chrisman, according to Dahl's story, didn't believe him at first, and then he looked at the damage to the boat, and he tried to blame Dahl for simply misusing the boat. But then I guess he went back out, and he saw one of these discs himself, which he said disappeared behind a cloud, and he found a lot of these fragments laying all over the shore of Maury Island. They collected a couple boxes of this stuff and took it back. Well, Arnold gets this story out of Dahl. Dahl is like 6'2", built like a lumberjack, very nervous, even though he's very big and very intimidating in appearance. He finally leaves, and the next day Arnold is awakened in the hotel room by somebody beating on his door, and it's Fred Chrisman. And he comes in and he tells his version of the story. Well, by the time this is all finished, Arnold is getting a little freaked out. He's thinking, man, I'm in over my head here.
And we'll get into what might have caused that feeling in further detail. We have Kurt Sutherly joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.